Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. Again, you can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keyes. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keyes. Well, this morning, I am just so honored to be able to speak to this icon. He's written over 60, 70 novels. He's worked on films. He's done nonfiction. And he's a lot of series of books. This morning, we're going to be speaking about his Easy Rawlins character and his new book called Blood Grove. This is Walter Mosley. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. You are beloved. When people found out you were going to be on the show, so many of my friends were like, oh, my God, Walter Mosley! And I was like, okay, calm down. Take a breath. How do you deal with that? Do people, like, you know, run up to you at awkward times trying to get your signature on books and things like that?
Oh, no, really, not so much. It happens, I mean, nowadays it doesn't happen at all because where are we, you know? But it used to be, like, a year ago, and maybe, like, two or three times a week I'd run into people who knew who I was and would say something nice. But it's not a whole bunch of stuff. Unless I'm doing a reading or an event, then a lot of people come up to me. But as a rule, I don't have the movie star problems.
Well, behind the scenes, you do. Trust me, you are beloved by many. Now, like you said, this past year has been crazy. How have you been handling COVID? And has this been good for you as a writer because you're isolated? Or has it been, like, nerve-wracking?
Well, I think it's what I recognize most of my life, being alone in a space doing work. You know, that's what I've done most of my writing life. And so it hasn't been difficult. I think, you know, for some people whose, you know, lives are much more kind of predicated on being with people and being out with people or working with them or, you know, working side by side with them. I mean, I think that's, you know, been a problem for a lot of people, but not for me.
This has been a great year because, you know, this is like, what, the 14th novel for Easy Rawlins?
This is the 15th, I think.
15th
book,
novel?
Yeah.
I mean, at one point I thought he was dead, right? He was going to be killed off in an accident.
Yeah, he ran off the side of a mountain.
Yeah. So why did you bring him back? Let's put it that way, or bring him back from the edge, or, you know.
Well, it's interesting. What happened was I was just writing this book, Blonde Faith, and I came to the end. And at the end, he was, you know, he was heartbroken. He'd been drinking for the first time in a long time. He was driving his car. He was barefoot driving his car, not that that matters, but he tried to pass somebody, and then a truck was coming, and then he went over on the soft shoulder, which was okay, but then he went off the side of the road. I had no idea that I was going to write any of that. I just wrote it. It just kind of happened. And I thought, all right, I can't think of new Easy Rawlins stories, and so I'm ending it, I guess. And, you know, that was it. I stopped. But I realized that that was, you know, in the later 60s. And what had happened was before that time, I was writing about my father and people from my father's generation, about their experience in Los Angeles. But by the time I got to the later 60s, it was my story that I needed to be telling through Easy rather than my father's. And when I realized that 3 or 4 years later, I started writing Easy again.
Yeah, you have a lot of history, and that's one of the beauties of your book. Almost like, you know, you look at Easy, we know who he is, but then you have all these other smaller characters that you really bring up to life. Like, I mean, I like the car mechanic, the woman who was the car mechanic, and how you explained about her in the book, and just little side people, you know, Montana, the you know, one of the ladies of the night, or, you know, if you will say. Do you think, as a writer, that is the most important, the world that is created, as opposed to that one character?
Well, you know, novels are all different. I mean, you could have a novel where you're only really inside one character, and it's hard to, and you know, that, you know, man or woman doesn't really understand other people. But Easy, you know, books like with Easy, you need to understand Los Angeles. You need to understand the history. You need to understand the world. I mean, the auto mechanic was a member of the Viet Cong, and there's a Vietnam War going on at that time. This is something, is it kind of an easy way to talk about that, is to bring in a character who in an unlikely situation. And I, you know, I love, you know, if you talk to somebody, they have to be real. If you know, if they're just kind of cardboard, then the novel is also. I mean, it's Easy story, and he's telling it, but everybody else is important. That's for sure.
Yeah. Now, some of the stuff that's going on with him, though, it looks like it's happening now. You know, him being stopped by the cops, you know, several times. You know, African American men have that problem now. When is it going to stop? When do you think it's going to stop, Walter?
You know, when people will talk to me about, you know, they'll talk about, let's say, they'll say, wow, all this really awful stuff is happening now. So many black men are being shot. What's going on? That's somebody might ask that question. Mm-hmm. And you know, the answer, of course, is, well, it's gone on every day for the last four centuries. It's just that now we have telephones that take pictures of it. That's all. I mean, that's the difference, right? And but also, I think I was talking to you know, younger people, you know, people like half my age or younger, and they're talking about the Black Lives Matter upheaval, and they're saying, oh, this is terrible, this is awful, what's happening to our world, is everything falling apart, are we about to die? And I said, well, you know, this seems to be a lot better. I remember, you know, in the Watts riots in 65, 44 people were killed, most of them black people, most of them black men, as a matter of fact. But, you know, and now, not only are black people out in the streets, it's, you know, so are Asian people, Hispanic people, white people, they're all out because black lives, you know, truly matter on an American level at this moment. And so I think things are changing. I'm not sure. I also think things are getting better. I mean, the question is you know, when is there going to be no problem? And I'm not sure that's happening. But you know, you have to. Everybody has their own struggle.
Yeah, everybody does, and that's something you do with your different characters. Everybody's fighting with, you know, different things. You know, Lola, the mother of the guy Craig, you know, she has her own story that, like, she's fighting. You know, you see her one way, and then another part of the book you see her a different way. I think that's what I like about the characters. They're very well-rounded. And even, like, the Christmas guy, he adopted
Christmas
a kid.
Christmas Black, yeah.
I was like, what? Yeah. That was, like, the craziest thing. Talk to us a little bit about Christmas and his
Well, Christmas Black, I mean, he's, you know, he's, ever since the beginning, he's had that daughter of his, Easter Dawn. And she comes from like the craziest situation because he was ordered by the government to, you know, destroy a town in Vietnam, which he did, and he was part of killing everybody except for this one little girl was there, this little, you know, she's maybe, you know, 9 months old, and he realized upon seeing her there, he realized, wow, everything I've ever done, and his whole family's always been military, so everything I've ever done, everything my family's ever done has been wrong. And he took the child and quit the army, and he's, you know, he's raising her. He's a soldier. He doesn't really like Easy because Easy's not, he's not military. I mean, he was in the army and everything, but he's not military. He doesn't like Easy's friends. He doesn't like Jackson Blue. He doesn't like Mouse, you know.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't understand how important these people, these characters are.
I think Easy is trying to find justice, and maybe that's why he does respect him. But like you said, he doesn't like him, but he does respect him, I believe, you know, that character. Now, do you think artists have to be activists? Because you are a bit of an activist in bringing out a variety of issues and social political issues in your books. Is that mandatory, or can somebody just be an artist and just you know, not have to worry about this other stuff going on in the world?
Well, I mean, it's nice if you don't have to worry about other stuff going on in the world. I mean, I think that, but you know, for instance, if you're a writer, let's say, but it doesn't matter what art it is. But as a writer, being one, I can talk about it. That if you're going to talk about the world, that world has to have a certain set of rules, and those rules are based on, you know, who the people are, what the governments are, what the politics are, what the, you know, with the, you know, the sexual tensions issues are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do that, then you're saying something else. And those rules have to make sense. If you don't follow what is, then you have to change it in an absolute way. So I think every person, certainly every person who's an artist, and probably every person, has to deal with politics at some point in their lives. And now some people, and I think that everybody might have to be an activist for what they think is right, because nobody has the world perfectly going the way they want it to go. Not since the czars in Russia. But that said, my activism might not be yours, or might not be somebody else's. I mean, people have different issues. Somebody says, well, my thing is eating meat. Eating red meat is, you know, eating animals is the wrong thing. Or somebody might say it's the environment. Or somebody might say, you know, how come white people aren't getting an even break? You know, I mean, people have all kinds of, you know, politics that they follow. And, you know, you have to say, okay, yeah, I'm either acting with you or against you.
You think there could be a good story out of the Capitol, insurrection, pseudo insurrection that happened? What would Easy think about that?
Yeah, of course there could be a story. There can be a story out of anything. I don't know, the issue is there can be a story out of anything. I mean, what would you talk about? I know every time I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, because you know all those policemen were armed, all of them, and these people are like, you know, breaking into the Capitol. I really, the fact that they only shot one person is amazing to me.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
And so there must be a story behind that somewhere. That would be really, really interesting. I know I couldn't be one of those policemen. I'd be shooting people. the first person hit me in the head with a pole, that person would have to get shot.
Oh my God, right?
You know what I mean? It's like, but, you know, they didn't. You know, they were like guardians of America. They were guarding the Capitol building. And the Congress that was in the Capitol building, but also in a way they were guarding the lives of the people who were attacking them.
Yep.
They just stood there for hours, completely outnumbered, trying to, you know, just be, we're going to be physical. We're going to keep pushing you back. I'm like, whoa, that's wild.
That's crazy. Now, you have won a lot of awards. You won a Grammy for Best Album Notes for Richard Pryor's and Beat 2. You won New York Writers Hall of Fame. You have an honorary doctorate from City College. But just recently, you are the first Black man to win the National Book Foundation Medal for Distinguished Contribution to American Letters. Wow. Where were you when you got the call? And what were you doing? Were you, like, just washing your dishes? I mean, what was going on?
Yeah, I was at home. You know, I got a call from the woman who runs Ross. I think she was doing something else now, but she ran the organization. And it was, it was kind of wonderful, you know. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's always that thing, you know. It's like you said, I'm the first Black man ever to get it, that award, the Lifetime Achievement from National Book Awards. And which is, you know, it's great to get an award. So like most people, when they get an award, they go, so, well, I want to thank my mother, and I want to thank my father, and my good friend, and my dog, thinking, you know, all these things that the people and things that you thank. I'm just sitting there going, well, I can't do that. I mean, I could, but the fact that I won it is great, and I love it, and I think I deserve it, and all that stuff. But Mary Baraka never got this. Ralph Ellison never got this. James Baldwin never got this. Ishmael Reed never got this. I mean, there are so many really important Black writers who haven't gotten this award and who could have gotten it. I mean, they were giving it out then. And you know, it's really something, you know. Three Black women got it. And, you know, many years ago, I was on the board of the National Book Awards, you know, and I made sure that, you know, people got, you know, got awards, and I gave awards out to, you know, people and stuff, you know, these awards, you know, to Black women. So it's an interesting moment where you have to say, well, I have to forget my parents and these other things, and I have to talk. Because I remember when I gave it to the first black person to get it was Gwendolyn Brooks. I had brought up her name in the thing. We finally gave it to her. And, you know, she was talking about her mother and, you know, and her children and her father. And you know, it was kind of wonderful, you know.
Yeah.
And I think her doing that was really good. But I just couldn't do it. I had to say, well, I have to talk about, you know, all these other important writers who go unnoticed. I was the first person of color to get the Grand Master Award from the Mystery Writers of America. You know, it's all good and well to get the award and to be recognized, and, you know, but there's another thing. It's like, wow, you know, look at all the people. Why didn't Chester Himes ever get this? You know,
it's crazy.
You know, right.
Now, let me ask you this. You did a master class, and I read that it was filmed in Iceland. Is that true?
Well, it was in the middle of the pandemic, and, you know, they called me and said, we want to do this. But, you know, it's like a little movie. They got like a director and about 80 people in the crew, and, you know, it's a big deal to do it. And so they called me and they said, well, the safest place in the world right now is Iceland.
I couldn't believe it when I read that.
And they had the language, you know, it's everything. There's not much of the disease, but also there are people who speak English. And they do a lot of film there. And so they flew me from Los Angeles to Iceland, Reykjavik, and then they flew me back. I was like, it was wild. I got, you know, they leased a plane. It was
That's
wild.
That's crazy. Now, do you you belong to the Crime Writers of Color organization? Do you think should belong to organizations such as that association? Does that help them get through like the publishing mud, so to speak? Is that useful?
Okay, then to begin with, there's two or three of us who started the Crime Writers of Color, so I don't even belong. I actually started it, and so that answers your question, I think, of course. But listen, I think everybody who works should belong to a union, you know, because, you know, I mean, a lot of people come to me and they'll say, well, you know, unions are bad because there's a lot of corruption in unions. I don't ever argue about that because, yeah, there is a lot of corruption in unions. There's corruption in unions, but you have to understand capitalism is absolutely corrupt when it comes to you working.
Yeah.
If a capitalist could pay you 10 cents an hour to work, doesn't matter if it costs a dollar an hour to live. They would pay you that 10 cents and say, well, I hope you can make it up somewhere. You know. And so, yes, I do believe, even though unions are not perfect things, that people need them. Because otherwise, you're not going to get any help at all.
Yeah. So in terms of your experience with the publishing industry, were you forced to write about certain things that you didn't want to write about? And at what point did you say, F this, I'm not going to do this anymore?
No, I always wrote what I wanted to write about. And when they told me they couldn't, I would go write somewhere else. I mean, that wasn't a thing. I mean, and I also started a thing called the Publishing Institute because, you know, any business that doesn't do business with the government is not going to hire people of color. Any business, unless they're owned by people of color. But, you know, it's like, if you belong to, you know, any kind of business that has to deal with the government, then yes, they're going to go out and hire people of color. But the publishing industry, they don't hire people of color, and they certainly haven't. They're doing it a little bit more now, but just a little bit more. Certainly, there's not an equal representation of people of color in that place. And so, you know, I'm always, fighting that battle. It can be very important.
Do you have a favorite E.Z. Rollins novel? Is there one that you were like, that was the best one I ever wrote? And the other ones are good, but this one is the best one.
I think probably Black Betty is the best.
And why is that?
I think how it showcases the tragedy of a Black woman's life to such a degree is that you end up thinking at the end, boy, she would be better off dead.
Wow.
You know, and like when you think that, you go, oh my God, that can't be true, can it?
Yeah.
You know, it can, and it is. So I think, but you know, listen, I like all of them. You know, I see them as a, rather than novels. I mean, they are novels and they stand alone, but they're also chapters of the life of this man and what he went through, starting in East Texas in 1939, and now this book, which is 1969.
Yeah, you talk about through your books the migration of like your father's family and you know Black people going into California and things like that. You know, migrating now wouldn't be so easy. I want to drive across country, but I'm afraid, Walter, to drive across the country, not about COVID, but just about, I'm afraid of white people right now. What are you afraid of right now?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to say, you know, I'm not afraid. I mean, I know, you know, when I was a kid, you know, in the early 70s, I used to hitchhike back and forth across country all the time, you know. So being in a car and driving, I'm not that worried. I mean, yes, you can get stopped by somebody and something awful can happen. It's true. But, you know, I think things are pretty good, you know, for people. I mean, we ourselves, you know, Black people, have to make sure that we're supporting, you know, those people who kind of get lost in the throes of institutional racism, you know, poor people who are, you know, who go without an education, people who are, you know, treated so poorly in the streets and stuff like that. But, you know, I think I'm okay, and I think that I can help people to one degree or another, you know, make it to a higher level, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, is that what you're doing with your teaching? Do you like teaching more than writing?
No, I hate teaching.
You hate teaching.
Why
are you doing it then?
I don't do it as a rule. I did master class. That was like making a movie. And I've written a couple of books about writing, which I think, you know, if somebody would read them, they would probably be able to write a book, whether or not they wanted to. My books actually, and I think books in general, bring up topics and issues and ways that people can think about their lives. Mm-hmm. And I don't tell them how they can think, but they read the book and they have thoughts. Maybe they aren't thoughts that I even considered, you know, but that, you know, that kind of pushes, you know, people forward. That's, I'm part of the dialogue. Being on the show with you today. I did a Black History Month thing with FX. I'm working on that show at FX, Snowfall. I addressed the various, you know, all the various people that Disney owns, you know, and that was, you know, that was, I think that it's not that I'm going to tell, you know, it's not like, I don't know which one of us is smarter or which one of us has a deeper understanding of something. But if you and I have a talk, then we both learn something. If somebody listens to us talking, then, you know, people might learn something or have an idea and explore that idea. It's about, you know, equality. It's about us working together, you know, as in our species.
You talked about Snowfall. I just had actress Michael Hyatt on from Snowfall. She plays the mom character.
She's wonderful,
and oh my gosh, she's awesome actress. And one of the things she talked about was she learned about the neighborhood actually being this like happy, you know, middle class area before the crack epidemic. What was your what are your memories about Watts before crack?
Well, listen, I mean, crack came a lot after, a long time after me. You know,
yeah,
I got into
the
show because of John, who was
you
know, very young. But, you know, I mean, there is a moment. I mean, this is like the whole Easy Rollins series is about, you know, is about that. You know, because there's a whole life there's that black people live. You know, you have people coming from, you know, Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, you know, all these places. You couldn't get a job in those places. You're a black person, you couldn't get a job. Or if you got a job, it was not the kind of job you wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, and somebody could pay you or they could not pay you. They could fire you. They could mistreat you. They could do anything to you.
Well,
you
nobody
can't in California.
Would stand up for you.
No, they better not. And you come, you know, to Los Angeles, you can work. You can get a job. You can, you know, because Los Angeles is growing then. It's still growing today. You know, so there, nobody owned an industry, not like in the big cities like eastern ones, New York, Chicago, where, you know, there's an electrician's union. It's all Irish. There's a, you know, there's a, the firemen, they're all, you know, I don't know. You know, there's like groups. You know,
right. Italians,
Irish, whatever. Yeah,
things
right.
Like that.
Yeah.
But in
L.A., It was growing so fast that you didn't have those kinds of organizations. And so people had to hire you. And my father, he had three jobs. He was happy. He owned a building, and nobody could take that building away from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And my father was talking, he was in one place, and a white guy was saying something bad about, you know, something, you know, racist to my father, you know, so in the late 40s, early 50s. And he was just sitting there looking around, saying, you know, say, how many white people are in here? How many black people are in here? You know, the kind of questions that you think. And to his shock, a white guy stood up and said, told this man to shut up. He said, shut up or let's step outside and talk about it. And my father was shocked. He went, a white man actually stood up for him. I was willing to, you know, to fight, you know, it was kind of an amazing thing. And so, you know, there was a lot going on, but there are a lot of limitations, you know, what kind of education people get. How did the police department was all white Southerners in the beginning here in LA. And so there were things that were great for you. And there were things that you really had to watch out for, you know,
Well, in the book,
and that's what's so complex. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, in the book Blood Grove, you bring up that issue of there's a white guy that stands in between Easy when he was looking for the Kirkland guy at the bar.
At the veteran bar, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You also, we're running out of time. I don't want to take too much, but one more issue is the veterans that you bring up and, like, PTSD. Like, you have it, but you also have it, I mean, you meaning Easy, I'm sorry, the character has it as from his car accident. He talks about that, but he also has it from the war. And then this guy that he takes on, Craig, he has it. Have you talked to a lot of vets and tried to get their experiences? How did you decide to, you know, keep that story?
No, I haven't really. I mean, I've known people who are veterans, and, you know, and when I was a you know, young hippie in, you know, in the Bay Area, in California, you ran across a lot of them, and a lot of, you know, people I knew, you know, from my junior high school and high school, they you know, went to war, you know, and went kind of crazy. So I know it from, you know, just like from me, you know, not from me researching, but from, you know, talking to people who, you know, and you know, sharing experiences, because I like talking to people, you know. I don't like to teach. I don't like to research. These are two things. They're just
two
things.
You like to write.
I don't like them.
you'd like to write, though. And what do you see? How many books? I mean, is your hand tired from typing? Do you have an assistant when you're working on these books, or you just do everything yourself? What's your process?
So tell me something. How many interviews have you done?
Oh, more than 500.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. I've only written 60 books. I mean, you have 500 interviews, and that's not the only thing you do. I know that. So, I think a lot of people, you know, it's great because I have a shelf and it's filled with my books, you know, and you know that's really great. I think everybody works hard in their life, and they've produced a lot and create a lot. It may not, you know, you might not be able to distill it down to a bookshelf, but anybody who works every day has done a lot in their life.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Talk to yourself. How many T-bone steaks you cook? Oh, 1,000. You know,
have they
gotten better? He said, well, they're still steaks, but yeah, I think they got better. You know.
So what do you hope people get out of Blood Grove?
Well, I hope they enjoy it. That's my first thing. And my first thing about writing is I hope you can read my book. I hope you enjoy it. Right. The second thing is I hope that they can – that two things. People who've had the experiences that Easy has, I hope that they can – they can be supported in a way. So, well, yes, this is what the way things are. This is what happened. You know, how come I haven't seen this before? Well, that doesn't matter because I'm seeing it now. You know, and then I think that other people and their various, considering their generation, it might be different, that people say, wow, this guy is doing things the way I would do them. It's just in a different place and from a different point of view. You know, that's the best. Those are the two things that I know that people can get out of it. And then, you know, that I just hope people read it and it helps them to think about the world in a new way.
Well, I really enjoyed reading the book. I loved all the side characters. I loved that he was, you know, this sexual man, you know, but he was also a fighter. He was a lover and a fighter. thank you so much for writing the book. I can't wait till the next one. If it's Easy or one of your other characters, I'll be keeping an eye out for you.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for talking to me. It's been fun.
Thank you. All right. You got happy Valentine's Day, Walter.
Wait, is it okay? But it's not yet. It's tomorrow,
no,
right?
No, tomorrow. But I won't talk to you tomorrow, so I'm saying it now.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was like, oh my God, did I mess up? Oh, okay. Great. thank you so much.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Have a nice weekend, okay?
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with the GOAT, author Walter Mosley. We were speaking about his book, Blood Grove, but we also spoke about a lot of other things. So I hope you can, if you missed the first part, the interview will be archived and you can listen to the whole thing. The book was amazing. I'm going to be giving away some copies of his book. So you want to follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys or check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, you can check me on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys, and you could win a copy of his book. I also might be giving something away for Valentine's Day. I don't know. I just might. So you better follow. But again, thank you so much for your support. I hope you have a great Valentine's Day. And I hope you stay tuned with the show. Actually, I have a special show happening next Friday. I'll be speaking with actress and author Tina Lifford from Queen Sugar, owns TV show Queen Sugar. She plays Aunt Vi. So that's actually a special show next Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So stay tuned for that. Have a great weekend.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.